queens, welcome to Dose of Deception with the Queens of Queens, Shannon and Emily.
Join our true crime family where we discuss murders, missing persons cases, mysteries, and a whole lot of conspiracy theories. So stay tuned for the wild ride.
Hey queens, welcome back to this episode of Dose of Deception. Before we get started, we just want to, like we do every week, let you know about our different social media accounts. Our Instagram is at Dose of Deception. We also have a Facebook group where we like to interact with our listeners, and that is also at Dose of Deception. If you are a new time listener, we will let you know what we do in this show. So each week, Emily in the first half comes in with a true crime case, whether it be murder mystery or missing person. And in the second half, I come in with a conspiracy theory that we talk about. So Emily, what are we talking about first?
So today we're going to be talking about the very frustrating disappearance of Jennifer Kesey.
Okay.
This case is particularly frustrating because it's one of those that I feel could have been solved very easily, but it was just bad police work, which just happens in most of these missing person cases, I noticed.
Yes.
So let's get into her backstory a little bit first. Jennifer is from Orlando, Florida, and she was born May 20th, 1981. She graduated from the University of Central Florida in 2003 with a degree in finance, and she was actually offered multiple jobs upon her graduation, which, you know,
doesn't happen often.
So she was a very successful person in everything that she did, in school and jobs and everything. She officially was declared missing on January 23rd, 2006, when she was 24 years old, and she's still considered a missing person today, and she'd be, I believe she'd be 39 now. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Jennifer was working as a finance manager at Central Florida Investments Timeshare Company, and was really loved by her coworkers, who talked about how responsible, positive, and friendly she always was to everyone. Only a short time before her disappearance, Jennifer had bought a condo in Orlando, and she was just starting her life. And this was actually her first place where she bought it herself with her own money. You know, she was finally starting off her own life. She didn't need her parents' help, so it was a really big deal for her. And they were really proud of her. It should be noted, once we get more into the suspects a little bit, the weekend right before she vanished, Jennifer went on vacation with her boyfriend. His name was Rob Allen.
Okay.
And they went to St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And she actually had slept by her boyfriend's place once they returned from their trip, Sunday into Monday. And they were in a long-distance relationship. He lived, I believe, 4 hours away from her. So the time that they spent together would usually be meeting up to go on a trip or something. On Monday morning, Jennifer drove straight to work from her her boyfriend's place. She did make it to work, and those around her report that she was acting completely normal as she always did. There was nothing out of the ordinary or any suspicious behavior. Security footage showed Jennifer leaving work around 6 p.m., and she had called her dad while driving home, and this call was made around 6:15 p.m. So she usually would call her dad every night anyway.
Yeah.
So this was, nothing was out of the ordinary. That evening, she placed three phone calls. One was to her mother, one to her friend, and the other one was to her boyfriend. Her last phone call was made around 10 p.m. to Rob before she went to bed. Now, he does say that they did have a very small argument while on the phone, but Rob says that they cleared everything up and they were ready to take the next step in their relationship. Now, I heard multiple accounts of what follows, but I believe that Rob said that sometime during the phone call, someone knocked on Jennifer's door and she told him, quote, "It's just my neighbor. I'm not going to answer it." She did not seem scared or surprised at all, but thinking about it, she calls him at 10 p.m., so it had to be like a super late time for somebody to be knocking on the door.
Yeah, that is
especially
weird.
Considering she goes missing the next morning, it's kind of Who was knocking on the door, you know? And why wasn't she concerned about it? Like, did that happen often? I don't know. Sometime that night, Jennifer's phone was powered off and her battery was removed, which is suspicious because she didn't have a reason to do this. She also had this guy named Travis. She had his phone with her because he was a friend of Jennifer's brother, Logan. And basically, when she went to when she went on vacation the weekend before with her boyfriend, Logan, her brother, asked, can me and, like, two of my friends stay over by your place? And so Travis had accidentally left his phone by her place. So to return his phone, she had to power it off and remove the battery, so it was completely normal.
Okay.
But nobody knows why her own phone and battery were removed.
Yeah, that doesn't really make sense for her to do it to hers as well.
Especially since she had work the next morning.
Yeah.
So that was a little, I don't know why she did that.
Yeah.
The following morning, her boyfriend felt something that was off because Jennifer would always either call or text him before she left for work in the morning, which she failed to do the following day. Now, Rob tried calling her sometime between 8 and 9 a.m., and then again between 10 and 11 a.m., but unfortunately, it went straight to voicemail, so he immediately became suspicious. Jennifer did not show up to work either, and her coworkers were immediately worried because she was the type of person who never was late to work ever, and even if she was, she would, even if it was just going to be 10 or 15 minutes late, she would call and, like, tell them ahead of time. Because, you know, like, just to respect other people's time.
Yeah.
So her not showing up to work at all was an anomaly.
Yeah.
Now, her employer actually contacted Jennifer's parents at 11 a.m. And they immediately jumped in their car and drove 2 hours from their home in Tampa to her condo in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how on top of things she was. And that's how much she would be in contact with them. That when they knew that she didn't show up, they immediately get in their car and drive there.
Mm-hmm.
And their quick reaction times, on top of, you know, how much the employer was worried about her,
mm-hmm.
is definitely warranted because Jennifer was an extremely safe person.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents had actually been held up at gunpoint.
Mm.
So they instilled this idea of safety in Jennifer and Logan while they were growing up. And since then, she was so hyper-aware of her surroundings, so much so that the girls in her sorority during college would call her Mother Hen because she was so protective and aware, and she was just, like, more of a leader of the group.
Mm-hmm.
She would always make sure everybody, like, she wouldn't even walk outside alone when it was dark out without being on the phone with somebody.
Yeah.
And also just with the girls in her sorority, she would just kind of look out for them all the time.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Love good sisterhood.
Oh, God. So, on their drive, they called the manager of Jennifer's condo and asked if he could check inside for anything out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
They report that nothing was out of place at all. There was no sign of a scuffle or a struggle or any sort of robbery. The locks were not broken into and all of the windows were still intact.
Mm-hmm.
So it just looks like a normal morning of her getting ready for work.
Yeah.
Jennifer's parents actually did, or actually it was the owner of the condo.
Okay.
But once the parents arrived, they did see that her car was not in the parking lot at the time. In her condo, though, there was a towel that was still wet and a bunch of clothes laid out, indicating that she had done her normal routine of showering and choosing an outfit for work.
Okay.
And also they knew that she had just been there because her shower was still wet inside.
Mm, okay.
So this was just a normal thing. It's so crazy that somebody could go missing
and have
that scene look so normal. The police refused, however, to consider her condo a crime scene.
What?
And they did not close it to the public, which might have destroyed any prints or DNA from a possible perpetrator.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, because they said, oh, she's 24, she'll be back. She just ran away for a minute, even though she was so safe.
That doesn't make sense, though. It's just because she's 24, she has a job that she goes to every day.
Yeah.
She has a routine that she follows every day.
And she also, I forgot to say this before, but she had a really important meeting that morning at work. So why would she miss that?
Why would she miss that?
Yeah. And the police got so frustrated with the Kesseys. This, honestly, they treated the family so badly, and I'll get into it, but it's so frustrating. They told them that if law enforcement received one more phone call from people the family knew regarding Jennifer's disappearance, they would start arresting people.
What?
Yeah, they told them that. Because they were just tired of it. Because they said, it's not a disappearance. She'll be back. They were not taking it seriously at all.
At least, I understand if you can't officially file it as a missing person case, but you have to at least accept the phone call so that if it becomes a missing person case or something like that, you have that information.
Especially because I believe it's 80%, it might be higher now, but of people that go missing are dead within the first 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most crucial time that you should be doing something. So that's very frustrating. They did discover that her cell phone, iPod, keys, briefcase, pocketbook, and the outfit she was wearing were missing. Mm. So she had taken that all with her.
Yeah.
Also, something that worried her family and the police eventually was that there was a can of pepper spray sitting on Jennifer's counter, which she kept next to her keys and grabbed every single morning.
Mm.
So why was everything missing but the pepper spray? It's a little weird. The pepper spray was still in her apartment.
Yeah.
The terrible police work only continued throughout the case, and in 2008, a couple in Windermere, Florida, they actually found a mace holder and a keychain with a mailroom key on it. Jennifer's family said that she had requested a new mailroom key recently, and her father says that this was the exact mace holder he bought her when she first moved out.
Mm.
Despite all this, you know, proof that it might have been her stuff, the police did not go to the couple's place to pick it up for further investigation. And they took so long, they said, we'll come get it. So long went by that the couple ended up dropping the items off at the police station with a note because the authorities were not going to do anything about it. So, just shows you they really did not care about this case, it seems.
And this is in Orlando, right?
Yeah.
So, that, to me, would seem like a large police department with good resources. So, even if, it's only been a couple of hours and it might not necessarily be able to be labeled as a missing persons case just yet, they should still be able to take a little bit of time to look into it, even if they don't, you know, use all of their resources as if it is a missing person. I feel like they could have been able to help.
Definitely. Also, I know that they change it every once in a while, but I'm not sure if you know. Do they, because I believe, like, in the past, it was you had to wait, like, 48 hours to label a missing person's case.
I think it is something like
that. But then they realize that people, like, die so fast, yeah. usually, so do they change it?
I think it is earlier than 48 hours.
Now?
But it probably changes according to state or county yeah. and not, like, federal, you know?
That's frustrating. I feel like you should be able to label it right away. I know there'd be
100%.
A lot of...
Or at least look into it right away.
Yeah.
Even if you don't label it as a missing person, at least consider it and think about the circumstances before mm-hmm. you just shut it down. Oh, it hasn't been enough time yet.
Yeah. So search parties were organized by the police and by Jennifer's friends and family, and they distributed flyers with her face and information on it around 5 to 7 p.m. on the day she went missing. So they worked relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's parents called Rob, her boyfriend, to tell him that she did not show up for work and hoped that maybe she was with him. But he told them that he was worried because he didn't hear from her that morning. But she, like I said, she did tell him that she had an important meeting that day.
Yeah.
So he thought maybe she was just nervous about it or distracted.
Yeah.
Or possibly she was cooling off from their small argument they had the night before.
Yeah.
Now, this is where the timeline gets a little bit confusing when you're reading a bunch of different articles. But I'm going to try to break it down for you as simply as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is where it gets frustrating. Because at 12 p.m., only 1 hour after Jennifer's condo manager checked her apartment... Surveillance footage from another apartment complex that's only 1.2 miles from her home shows a person driving into a parking lot, driving Jennifer's car. They pull into a spot, they realize they're crooked, they fix it, then they get out and they just casually walk away, and they are on camera.
Yeah.
But when I show you the camera footage, it's going to be very frustrating, because this person, the only way that you could see them up close, so you could see one camera capture them parking, but it was too far away.
Yeah.
They get out. Another camera captures them pretty close.
Yeah.
However, they're blocked, so there is a fence.
Mm.
Now, the fences have the, like, skinny bars, but yeah. you know how every once in a while there's, like, a thick bar there?
Yeah.
It was one of those cameras that only captures a picture every 3 seconds. Every single picture was behind one of the bars.
Those.
So they don't know who this person is to this day.
That's so annoying.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I said, this was recorded only an hour after she disappeared, so that mm-hmm. was not a lot of time. But the footage was actually found not until 2 days later, mm-hmm. her disappearance. The police are officially called between 3 and 3:15 p.m. by Jennifer's parents and brother, Logan, once they arrived at her apartment. Since Jennifer is an adult, like I said, authorities initially believed she'd just come back that night. The family, because the authorities were so lackluster at this case,
mm-hmm.
the family had to take it into their own hands. And around 5 to 7 p.m., the same time friends and family are distributing posters and flyers, the police ended up sending a detective to Jennifer's condo, and the official investigation began.
Mm-hmm.
2 days go by with no evidence or clues to where Jennifer could have gone, and this is when, at 8:10 a.m., on January 26, 2006, a tenant saw Jennifer's missing car on the news and realized that it matches the abandoned car that had been sitting in the parking lot for 2 days
mm.
in the nearby complex.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, since her car was missing, wouldn't the first place you look be, like, any other complexes? It's crazy to me that they didn't, like, it was only a mile away.
Yeah, it's close enough that if you just search the nearby area, that's yeah. one of the places that you would happen to be looking into.
Yeah. This tenant called the police immediately, and they confirmed that it was Jennifer's 2004 Chevy Malibu. This is when police find the surveillance footage of the unidentified person parking and walking away from Jennifer's car. So, from me watching it, I'll give you my own, like, what I see. So, the person is not walking urgently or appears to be anxious. They're just strolling, it seems, and authorities call this the luckiest person alive, because despite being caught on camera... There is a black gate that just so happens to block their face the entire time,
mm-hmm.
making them impossible. And by one of the people on the case, or I believe it might have been a journalist, they referred to them as the luckiest person of interest ever in true crime history. So what do you think about the video?
I agree with that person 100%, because mm-hmm. it just so happens when, if you haven't seen the video, if you imagine...
I'll upload the video too.
Yeah, and when you open a gate up, it... rest on the two hinges, right? So there's one taller one where the gate would close over and one where the gate begins. So I just so happened to walk in between those where you perfectly cannot see their face. Now, they definitely did not plan that. There's no way you could perfectly time that out. So it really is just luck that mm-hmm. they happened to walk by. And they did have a very casual demeanor. They also took a very long time to park the car. And if that's a car you're just trying to get rid of, you would park it really quick and then get out of there as quick mm-hmm. as possible. Obviously, you can't run because that makes you look suspicious, but, yeah. you know, you wouldn't seem as, like, chill as this person did. It's hard to distinguish whether it's a man or a woman.
Oh, yeah, I can't tell. Sure. I go back and forth. It looks like a woman to me, and then it just switches in my head to be yeah. like a man. I don't know.
We said that it does there is like a bump in their hair, so it might like a bun, which would lead me more towards it being a woman. But they also looked like they had big feet and like were wearing dress shoes and they had like bigger legs. Mm-hmm. So that makes me think that it might be a man. So it could really go either way on that. So the video really is no help at all.
Yeah, it's not. Now, since there were no signs of forced entry or a struggle in her condo and the front door was still locked, authorities believe that Jennifer must have been abducted while walking the short distance from her condo to the parking lot. Or maybe someone was waiting by her car for her. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy because she got the spot that was right by her condo.
Yeah.
So how did this all happen so fast? It's just so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just another reason, side note, why every building should have working cameras.
Oh, 100%.
Because her condo didn't have it.
Well, there you go. That would have solved this.
That would have solved it, yeah.
And that does make me think a little bit that it might be someone that she knows.
Why?
Because if it's someone waiting at the car, it's... They have to know that it's her car.
Mm-hmm.
They would know what kind of time she's coming out. So it might, obviously it doesn't have to be. It could just be somebody who's looking to take somebody. It wasn't necessarily had to be her. And she just happened to be the one that walked out at mm-hmm. that time. But that could help it maybe be somebody that she knew.
Yeah, maybe. And also it's very easy to like separate yourself from these cases, but this could be you or someone that you love one day. So it's just so frustrating that like just not having a camera prevented all this from being solved.
Yeah, it would have made it completely different.
Also, authorities actually, because the video is so blurry and you can't even tell, like, what gender the person is,
mm-hmm.
so the authorities actually called in NASA to help them enhance the video quality. So, that didn't help at all. Basically, even NASA, who could take pictures of Saturn from, like, a million miles, they were like, ooh, we can't
do it.
We can't do anything about this. Like, it could have quite literally been a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
Because maybe she was being held for a little bit before somebody, if they hurt her.
Yeah.
And they, she could have been found just from that video. Mm-hmm. So it's really frustrating. Anyways, off the rant. None of Jennifer's friends or family recognized the person on camera. FBI analysts could also not determine the person's gender or age. However, they were able to determine, at least a little bit confidently, that the person was between 5'3 and 5'5. So it makes me think it's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Just weird. It makes it weirder. I don't know.
Yeah, that's... I mean, obviously guys can be that short.
Yeah.
But on average, odds are it would have been a woman.
That's which crazy.
Also does, too, make that weird because would this random one have been, like, she would have been able to put up a fight, you know what I mean?
True.
Like, she would have tried to escape.
Yeah.
So that makes it weird to me.
Also, just side note, only one person got out of her car and she, like, wasn't found in the car. So mm-hmm. what happened there? Like, where is she? You know what I mean?
Well, this person that was in front of the gate might have been in charge of getting rid of the car.
True. I mean, like, it was a whole...
And it
thing.
Was somebody else that actually mm-hmm. took her.
Maybe. So when investigating her car, there did not appear to be any sign of, like, speeding or, like, scuff marks or anything like that mm-hmm. to indicate that they were, like, going fast trying to get away. Many things of value sat untouched in the car as well, including a DVD player, which it was 2006. So,
yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah. So this worried authorities and Jennifer's family because the motive was not robbery.
Yeah.
Rob, her boyfriend, told police that Jennifer's seat appeared to be moved further back, indicating mm-hmm. that maybe she wasn't driving the car that mm-hmm. morning. But also, she was, I believe she was taller than 5'5", so that's a little weird. Maybe they got, I don't know. Maybe the video is just so grainy that they couldn't definitely identify the height, but they were pretty confident that they were between 5'3 and 5'5".
Yeah, I mean, it could also be somebody else who's initially driving the car.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm, like, stuck on that one. That doesn't mean I'm, like, for sure on that one. I'm just, like, thinking that is a chance that it could be like that.
Yeah. So they did bring in sniffer dogs, and they actually followed the scent from her vehicle back to her condo, indicating that, to investigators that the person who abandoned the vehicle might have went back to Jennifer's place by foot. Mm,
okay.
Which is also weird, because there was no sign of any entry or anything.
Yeah.
When forensic analysts were brought in, they only found one print and a small DNA fiber, which did not help much in the investigation. However, it did alert authorities that Jennifer's car most likely was wiped down before it was abandoned.
Yeah.
Authorities were not able to ping her cell phone either because it had been off that whole morning.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, attention was turned to Jennifer's ex-boyfriend, Matt, because it came to light that he had been reaching out to her recently in hopes of getting back together.
Mm.
But she didn't want to do because she loved her boyfriend.
Yeah. Is this the one that knew her brother?
Her brother. Okay. Yes. It also was discovered that he, like I said, he had stayed at Jennifer's place with Logan and Travis
mm-hmm.
the weekend before she was vacationing. And it had also been, I believe, the night before she went missing, he had been across the street at a bar. in by Jennifer's condo, mm-hmm. which also makes me think, could it have been him knocking on her door that night when she told Rob that it was just a neighbor?
Maybe, which would make sense because you wouldn't really want to tell your boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend is knocking on my door right
now. Yeah, and also maybe he was just drunk knocking. I don't know if he necessarily did anything.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean he's doing anything, but it does kind of show that there's a chance it was him that was doing that.
However, after questioning, authorities concluded that he had nothing to do with her abduction because he was at work the next morning, which wasn't nearby where she went missing. Yeah. He cooperated with police and he answered all their questions thoroughly, and there was no evidence whatsoever of her being in her condo.
Yeah.
Now, her current boyfriend's alibi also checked out as he was nowhere near her home that morning that she went missing. So there was not much weight behind their two main suspects, because obviously the two main suspects are always going to be your partner and then ex-partner.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to me, it seems like they're both all right.
Yeah. Jennifer's father recalled that there were construction workers who worked at his daughter's condo, because I believe they were renovating it to make it into apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. So there was construction workers there every day.
Mm-hmm.
And she had told her family on numerous occasions that they would catcall her and whistle, which make her really uncomfortable.
I hate guys.
I hate guys, too.
Anyway.
It's so uncomfortable. It's just the most uncomfortable feeling. You feel so unsafe.
It's just so unnecessary. Mm-hmm. When has that ever worked for anyone ever? Like, what's the point? And also,
just, like, it just makes you feel so unsafe.
Yeah. Anyway.
So authorities tried to investigate this further. However, there was a language barrier, as the workers did not speak well English. Mm. And the majority of the workers were also undocumented immigrants, so it was nearly impossible for authorities to find out any concrete information about them.
Mm.
Even most of their names, they couldn't find out.
They're a little suspicious,
because
they would have known what her car is.
Yeah.
They would have known which specific condo she lived in, when she usually comes out of the house.
Exactly. They would have been able to memorize her schedule.
Yeah.
And to further, obviously they couldn't get much information on these men. And like I said, they kept disappearing. However, 2 years after Jennifer went missing, authorities at least got a lead in one of them, because one of the construction workers was arrested for a statutory rape.
Mm.
So they were able to confirm that he was working at Jennifer's complex while she lived there, and he had actually been inside her condo to do some work.
Mm.
Like I said earlier, Jennifer was such a safe person that whenever he was inside the condo, she would call her father and have him on the phone the entire time,
yeah.
And she also would never close the door with him in it. That so she'd sense. Always make sure she was in the hallway standing there.
Makes sense.
Now, he lied, I don't know his name, but he lied once the authorities questioned him, and he said, no, she would close the door and, like, she wasn't on the phone with her dad. And, like, he said all this stuff that wasn't true. And the dad was like, no, I heard her on the phone with you last time that you were in the condo.
Well, it's probably to make him seem less suspicious. That, oh, yeah, she saw me as a welcoming person.
So there was no evidence, though, that he was involved in her disappearance, so they couldn't do anything further.
Yeah.
Authorities questioned those in her workplace, and none of those were made suspects until they took her laptop in for examination. So they found messages from Jennifer's manager, whose name was Johnny Campos.
Mm.
He was a married man who was 10 years older than Jennifer, and he wanted a relationship with her so badly.
Rough start for this guy.
Rough start. In the messages that they read about between him and Jennifer, she rejects his offer and advances because he was her manager, and she was just against any romantic interaction in the workplace.
You know, like HR basic stuff that he literally, should be following, but whatever.
Johnny actually was arrested, so this actually wasn't in any of the videos I could find. I had to go really deep for this.
Yeah.
Because this wasn't released, I guess, before.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny was actually arrested a week before her disappearance during a routine traffic stop because he became violent and hostile with the officer. He was being, like, very, very violent.
Mm.
He pretty much just went ballistic on the cop. His wife bailed him out, but they were saying, why was he so agitated? Well, looking deeper into this case, I think we may know why. So Johnny became a suspect rather quickly, especially because when he found out that Jennifer went missing, he said to some of his co-workers, quote, she was probably eaten by alligators by now. So right off the bat.
All right. Not something you say.
Never right. Something you say.
Yeah.
So the co-workers called police and was like,
maybe check this guy.
And Johnny was questioned because he showed up at noon to work that day. It was also obvious that he was very jealous if other workers showed attention to Jennifer.
Mm.
He would get, like, possessive and just, no.
And he just so happens to be late that day.
So initially people were believing that he was late because he got a traffic stop again and got, like, a speeding ticket. And I thought that there was evidence that he got that, but I believe that was just what people thought. And it turns out that he actually was never, he never got a speeding ticket, so there is no proof that he was stopped or anything.
Mm.
He also reportedly got upset when Jennifer told him that she had a great weekend with her boyfriend on vacation the weekend before. And he was jealous of her boyfriend. So maybe it was him that knocked on the door as well. Because I don't think Jennifer would view him as, like, an immediate threat in that case. And she might have let him in or at least opened the door for him. I would.
I don't think so.
I think so.
Why? I wouldn't have. If my crazy boss knocked on my door.
No, but, okay, but this is all after the fact. Like, I don't think that she saw him as crazy. I think she just saw him as, like, okay.
A creepy guy.
And then yeah. But not, like, oh, he's gonna kill me.
I guess. I probably would have just shut the light and pretended that I wasn't home.
So many people think maybe he could have harmed her the night before and then disposed of her maybe the next day. However, this wouldn't make sense of the struggle in the apartment. But they were, because there was no struggle.
Yeah.
But they think that maybe he hired someone, possibly one of the construction workers, who needed cash and didn't want to get involved with authorities because they were undocumented. Mm-hmm. Maybe he hired someone to drive her car to drop it off, and that's why they weren't really in, like, a rush or anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe. They might have not even known that it was, like, a crime thing. They might have just said, take this car, bring it over there, here's a couple bucks.
Exactly, because for me, watching the video, I think that whoever drove it did not even...
That would make sense.
...know that it was, like, a crime scene or anything.
Yeah, that would make sense. But then it would be good for the boss to be like, that's my alibi. Like, oh, the construction worker did it. He's the one that took the car.
Exactly.
So it gets him out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The only other theories authorities and the family could think of that held any weight was human trafficking. Which, I mean, you have to say that for every abduction. Yeah. But obviously, there's no, like, hard evidence. But the fact that she just disappeared without any trace. Usually in abduction cases where it's somebody that you know, they leave behind some evidence. So it's just happened, like, very perfectly. Mm-hmm. I'm also confused about the camera footage. So I know we already talked about it a little bit, but can you just, like, give me your theories on this? Because this is the stuff that I couldn't figure out. The first thing was that one person was seen on camera. Mm-hmm. So initially you're going to assume it's whoever hurt her.
Yeah.
Maybe it was, like, a red herring that was another person that actually hurt her. But, like, it was only 1.2 miles between her condo and the apartment. So her body's not in the condo or whatever happened. There's no sign of struggle by the condo.
Yeah.
So what happened, like, on that 1.2 mile drive? That's what I'm confused
about. Well, I don't necessarily think that whoever did it was there the night before. It might have been just somebody showed up right outside her condo.
Okay.
Because it said that she took a shower, right? There was still water on the floor. Yeah. So that had to be from the morning. There wouldn't still be water on the floor from the night before. Mm-hmm. Her clothes were laid out or whatever. So that makes me think that she was in her apartment. She was okay.
Okay.
And then it would have been either while she was leaving her specific condo or while she was outside, you know, the complex or whatever, that something might have happened from there.
Okay, that also makes sense because in the car there's no sign of, like, blood or struggle or anything. So...
Well, it also might have been somebody just grabbed her and put her in the car.
No, but that's what I mean. It makes sense because...
It could have happened outside.
Maybe she didn't even get in her own car.
Yeah, and there's no stinking security camera that shows you that. So it might have been, maybe, whoever did it. I think it's the boss, but whatever. There's no evidence of that. If he's been proven to not be him, you know, I can't firmly say 100%. But we'll just say it's him for now. So if it's him, he might have put her in probably not his own car, but somebody else's car. Took her and then said, oh, bring this car to the parking lot. As of he's thinking ahead of time that this could be... the excuse for this is the guy that did it, not me.
But wouldn't they just say, oh, he hired me? You know what I mean? I feel like it'd be so obvious to come back to him. That's what I was thinking, too. I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like it'd be so obvious for one of the construction workers to just be like, oh, that guy, like, a guy hired me, and then describe him, and it would be Johnny. I don't know.
I guess that's true. That does make sense.
It's just weird.
And I mean, just because if they were only speaking Spanish, somebody in the police department can translate for them. Like, mm-hmm. It still would have gotten out. I guess that does make sense.
It's just a weird case.
It could be somebody that, well, Johnny or whoever it is that did it knows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like a friend?
Yeah. Maybe. Like somebody that could have known that this was happening and still moved it, and then was just acting super nonchalant about it.
Many people also theorize that it could have been Jennifer in the video, mainly because of the height and also, like, the bun or whatever. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is just a theory, but many people believe that she left of her own volition and was planning to run away or something, but something bad happened to her along the way. I don't know. We have to kind of consider everything because it does look like a woman in the footage, to be honest.
It's fair to think that, and I can see why people would think that it's her. Mm-hmm. It's barely any image, but I can see why people would say it was her based off the image that you can see.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think it's her because she has this important meeting. She's someone that's very work-oriented. It seems like that she would want to get to work, that this would not be the day that she would pick to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. Even if there was... Because people can still try to run away and you just don't know that they're feeling that way. But to me, even if she was feeling that way, this isn't the day that she would pick. After she had a great conversation with her boyfriend, she just came back from vacation, she has an important meeting. Yeah. Doesn't seem like the time that she would do that.
So basically, that is all the evidence is the car and the video that you can't even see. And basically, Jennifer's parents had to sign a contract saying that by law, the police are no longer required to look for her because it has been 15 years. And so the family was forced to hire their own private investigator. So the police were just stopped looking, pretty much.
That's stupid.
I do want to play, because the family is very upset with the police, and I do want to play a clip of them speaking, so I'll do that now. But they do have a GoFundMe, which, obviously, if you have the means to donate, you can, to go to their private investigator to continue looking for Jennifer.
It's been more than a decade since Jennifer Cassie disappeared in Orlando. Despite years of searching, what happened to her remains a mystery.
Today we're announcing an enhanced focus on the Jennifer Cassie investigation.
Orlando Police Chief John Mina announced today his department is determined to find out what happened to Jennifer Cassie, who went missing in 2006. The chief showed off this Lynx bus wrapped with Cassie's photo, asking for the public's tips. The reward money in the case has also jumped to $15,000.
We continually investigate this case.
Cassie's family stood behind the chief today, but after the news conference, they told us they're frustrated with Orlando Police.
We are nowhere after 12 years. We are nowhere.
Logan Cassie was just 21 years old when his sister disappeared without a trace. Now, he says, the family hired their own private investigator to look into the case, and they're calling on OPD to make their files public.
It's a joke, guys. This is the only reason this is going on is because we are putting pressure on them because we have attorneys involved now.
Since Cassie vanished, only few clues have been made public, like her car recovered at the Huntington on the Greens condos. And because the case is considered active, OPD will not release the case files, so the family is now planning to take OPD to court to try to make them.
We want answers. That's it. Doesn't matter. We want answers. We want to know what is going on.
Now, authorities only showed new crime scene photos to the family 14 years after she went missing. So they basically saw what we saw.
Yeah.
And that was it. Now, there was a picture, a close-up picture of her car that kind of looked like it had marks on it, where it looked like somebody may have been like slammed down on the car and dragged, because you kind of see possible, like, it kind of looks like dust, but you see kind of like nail marks in a way. So that's, I mean, that's new evidence that could indicate that whatever happened to her happened right when she, even before she got into her car.
Yeah.
Now, new tips are still coming in full force, so it's not like this case has been forgotten. I think even this year, there's been new tips that come in.
That's good.
Yeah. So like I said, I'll link the GoFundMe in the description box that if you do have the means to donate, please do.
Hey Queens, welcome back to the conspiracy half of our episode this week. Now before I get into it, I want to mention that I truly hope that the conspiracy theory that I am talking about is not true.
Yes.
And just for the record, I don't think it is true. I'll mention why later. However, due to not just its popularity, but also its political and historical ramifications, I felt that this theory was one that was worth speaking about. So I'm going to be talking about the possibility that Hitler did not die in 1945, and for the most part, I will be talking about the possibility that he escaped to Argentina.
Okay, I've heard the theories that he didn't die, I just didn't know what happened after.
The most popular one, and of course there are others, but the most popular one is that he ended up escaping to Argentina.
Okay, I'm ready.
So first I'm going to talk about the historically accepted events around his death, how most people would say that he died. Now, Hitler died on April 30th, 1945, and his death was ruled a suicide. He died in Berlin inside his Führer bunker, which was an air raid shelter, and he died by a gunshot wound to the head with the belief that he may have taken a cyanide pill beforehand. I also think it's worth mentioning that on April 29th, so this is just one day before they died, the day before he died, Hitler married his only wife, which I don't know why I found that weird. I just imagined Hitler having a bunch of wives.
I know what you mean.
I don't know why.
Wait, wasn't her name Eve?
Eva.
Eva. How did I know that?
I don't know. I did not know. I really, really thought that he had a bunch of wives. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I had that perception in my head.
It's because he's like that kind of person.
A dictator. Like everyone in that country did whatever he wanted. Yeah. So he could probably have gotten whoever he wanted, you know? But he ended up marrying his first wife, Eva Braun, in a private ceremony that took place in the shelter that they were in. She also committed suicide at the same time as Hitler. However, she died just by cyanide poisoning, not by the gunshot wound to the head. Also, in case you didn't hate Hitler enough, to test that the capsules would actually kill him and his wife, because he was nervous that they weren't actually going to work, that it was just going to make them ill and that they would still end up captured, he made his dog trainer, yeah, here, you see where this is going, he made his dog trainer test the cyanide pills on his dog Blondie.
No!
So, his dog trainer ended up killing his dog Blondie to make sure that
That's messed
they
up.
Worked. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, Hitler apparently was sad that his dog ended up dying.
I feel like I would still be scared, though, because it's, like, different with the dog and a human.
100%, just because of the, you know, anatomy of a dog.
Yeah, they're like smaller. The size.
Yeah, they could take less poisoning than a human would, but that's how he tested
he's
that
it would up. Work.
Oh, 100%. He's top five worst human beings that have ever walked the earth, 100%. Also, another side note about his dog, another depressing one, unfortunately, his dog, Blondie, had had puppies almost right before the Blondie was killed. So after Hitler was found dead and all those things happened, Hitler's dog handler, who his name was Fritz Tornau, ended up killing Blondie's puppies.
How?
Right after. Like, shot them.
Why?
Don't know.
That's messed up.
Yeah, very. So, yeah, in case you just didn't hate Hitler enough, there's some other things to add on to it.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah. Now, it's also worth noting that the war, although not officially over at the time, it was clear that Germany was going to lose. Mussolini had been killed days prior, and the Soviet Union was only a day or two away from entering Berlin and ending the war. Now, Mussolini had been killed in a very public way. He was killed in a firing squad in the middle of a city, so Hitler did not want to be killed in such a manner. Now, Hitler did have warning that this was going to happen, that Soviets were about to enter Berlin, and although they were not guaranteed escapes, there were active escape plans for him to leave Germany. However, he declined, as he would have rather died than be captured, and he preferred to dictate the last of Germany's military moves and strategies. So while he was in the bunker, he was still running the army for Germany. Now I'll get into where the theory derived from. The suspicious behavior of the Soviet Union and its officials right after the events of Hitler's death made this theory one that became immediately thought of. Georgi Zhukov, a military marshal under Stalin, was the one who fueled the idea that Hitler was not found dead.
Okay.
Zhukov's men originally reported to papers that Hitler was found dead. However,
who found him? Like, officially, I mean.
Just Soviet soldiers.
Okay.
It wasn't, like, Stalin or a specific person in itself. So, but, of course, Hitler's inner circle were the initial people that found him, but people that outside of Germany, it was Soviet soldiers that were the first ones to find him.
Okay.
So, however, in July of 1945, during the Potsdam Conference, which was the last meeting between the three leaders of the big three Allied powers, which USSR, Britain, and America, Stalin told a close confidant of FDR that Hitler was still alive. Although this is the main account, it became public knowledge that Stalin stood by his comments.
Hmm.
Soon after, Zhukov fell in line, and in a press conference, he claimed that Hitler was alive.
Hmm. Wait, so you said you don't believe the theory that he went to Argentina or just that he's alive?
I don't think he's alive.
Okay.
I'll explain at the end. There's some things that have been found that can connect him to having being died in the bunker.
Okay.
The Soviet Union also was very stingy with the information that was given out to Western countries. They had complete control over the crime scene and had control over the questioning of Hitler's close associates that were on the scene. Also, in 1945, British newspapers reported that Soviet soldiers had told them that Hitler's body was merely a quote-unquote very poor double.
Hmm.
Now, these are people that seen it with their own eyes, so although it's an eyewitness report, it is pretty trustworthy. However, it is worth mentioning that Hugh Trevor Roper, who was the British intelligence agent that was undercover in charge of determining if Hitler was alive, did ultimately state after extremely extensive work that Hitler was dead.
Okay.
There are people that have questioned his credibility, however. He also used Hitler's diaries in his investigation. However, these diaries were later proven to be faked. Now, it is worth mentioning that just like the moon landing, right after the events is when believability in the theory is at its heights. In 1947, 51% of Americans believed that Hitler was alive.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
That is a lot of people.
I would say, like, maybe 10, you know? When you think about theories like this, it's usually, like,
10%. 100%. But this is the majority of Americans at that time believed that Hitler was still alive. Further into the 50s, it has been revealed that the FBI had continuously followed leads by people that claimed to have seen Hitler. Now, if the FBI was 100% certain that Hitler had died, why were they following thousands of leads?
True.
Now, the most popular theory, as I stated, is his possible escape to Argentina. There have been many works to try to back up this theory, the most popular being a 2011 book called Grey Wolf, The Escape of Adolf Hitler by Simon Dunstan and Gerard Williams. Their very detailed book says that Gustav Weber and a propaganda actress replaced the Hitlers in the bunker and were the body doubles that the Soviet Union soldiers found. The Hitlers were first flown to Spain, which was an Axis power, and then flown to the island of Fuerteventura. There, they took a submarine to Argentina. The incoming president of Argentina at the time, Juan Perón, supported Nazism, and his wife, Evita, had been receiving funds from prominent members of Hitler's inner circle. So they were definitely supporters of Hitler, especially financially.
Yeah.
And the president was a known supporter of his ideals. They also claimed in the book that Hitler was one of the wealthiest men in the world, and he would have had more than enough funds to be able to pull off a stunt such as this. The biggest criticism of this book is that they use almost exclusively eyewitness reports as their evidence, which is clearly unreliable. In more recent years, there have been more scientific evidence that also discredits the theories that they displayed in the book. Although some original bones that were stated to be Hitler have over the years been proven to be others, a set of teeth that was entrusted in Russian hands has been confirmed 100% to belong to Hitler.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, yeah. I can't really dispute that if it's 100%.
Yeah.
Now, the original bones that they had for years were claiming to be Hitler's actually turned out to have been of a woman that was under the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
So when that was proven to be true, a lot of people, you know, rightfully questioned why those were credited for so long to be Hitler's and if there were fake ones that were placed in just to show to the Western countries that weren't the Soviet Union that, yeah, oh, we found Hitler, when it was really just random bones that they had put together. Although not very ethical, it can be assumed that some of the torture techniques used when the inner circle of Hitler was captured would have resulted in someone talking about Hitler's escape plan to Argentina. Now, because remember, the Soviet Union were the ones almost exclusively involved in questioning them about Hitler's death because they were the first ones on the crime scene. And at the time, the USSR did use torture techniques that I think would have gotten somebody to spill the beans about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I do want to mention that the rise of this theory in years following Hitler's death did lead to some rises in Nazism in different countries. So that's why I speak about this with a grain of salt, because leading a theory like this and really pushing it as 100% this is true can be dangerous,
mm-hmm,
if you're gets into the ears of someone that wants to hear something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Now, do you think any of this theory holds some legitimacy?
Well, I just have a question about the teeth that they found.
Mm-hmm.
So you said they were using another pair of teeth first?
Or, well, like, it wasn't not teeth, another it was pair. Bones, yeah.
Oh, bones, okay.
Yes.
So why can't they just, why is the other ones 100%?
Well, it was, I don't remember the name of the woman, but it was a person, these teeth were specifically entrusted with one specific woman, a specific Russian woman, that was holding on to them until, you know, they were gonna, had the technology basically to 100% prove that it was his.
Okay.
So we know that these teeth did not go, they went straight from the bunker to one person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, there's not a lot of opportunities for meddling within those teeth. And just scientifically, they were able to determine that they were his teeth.
And what happened to his body after the soldiers found him?
So after it was found, they were, you know, exhumed the next day and delivered to Soviet, you know, agencies or whoever, okay, it was that would have looked at the body and things like that. And then later on, in early June of 1945, his body, his wife's, and other members of his circles were moved to Finau, where they buried Hitler's remains there.
Okay. I mean, I think that there could be ways to the theory, because any theory, unless I see the body, like, unless you see the body yourself,
yes, and
there's always, like, a way that it could be true.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And, like I said, some of the Soviet people that would have seen firsthand did say that they didn't, it didn't really look like it.
Oh, yes, you did say that.
That it was body
that.
Doubles.
Huh.
So just because, yeah, people saw his body, but, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that it's not the other associates that were standing in for him, basically. So that's the specifics I have on that theory. Like I said, this is a extremely popular theory. A lot of people have heard of this. So if you have any other evidence of this theory, please let me know. And I just want to end it with a quote from Trevor Roper, who, remember, was the British agent that was investigating. Had this to say as the conspiracy was at its height. The desire to invent legends and fairy tales is greater than the love of the truth.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed. Tune in every Friday for more mystery and madness.
Bye, queens.